Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, an opportunity to talk about health and nutrition issues in our modern world. This week, we're going to be focusing on two very important news items, the ecological and environmental nightmare that is unfolding in the Gulf of Mexico. And we're also going to be talking taking a look at the proposal on farming genetically modified salmon. Some might call them frankenfish. Joining me on the panel are the husband and wife, researching and writing team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Hello to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And how is wonderful Southern California today?
It's so beautiful, we're not going to say a word.
And the roads look gorgeous. It's gorgeous out.
You promised not to say a word.
Yeah.
I also want to point out to our listeners that our phone lines are open, and we do encourage anyone with questions to please call in. Our switchboard number is area code 646-378-1120. For many weeks now, Manny, Ashley, and I have been watching the Gulf of Mexico with ever-increasing concern. While the popular press has moved on, the final chapter in their eyes being the permanent capping of the leaking deep horizon well, the story really is only just beginning. Several grassroots organizations have sprung up in the Gulf region, and one of the best known is the Cultural Heritage Society of Louisiana. Joining us today is Joni Hughes of the CHSL. Welcome to the program, Joni.
Thank you, Simon, for having me once again. I appreciate it.
I was wondering if you could give us an update on what is happening on the ground, if you will, in the Gulf region.
Sure, I'll do my best. One of the things that I like to try to start something with good news if I can, and sometimes it's hard to harvest any good news out of the situation, but one of the things I wanted to say was that in Plaquemines Parish, which is the parish that is closest to the Deepwater Horizon situation, our parish president, Billy Nungesser, has taken it upon himself to take charge of the cleanup of oil in our parish and on our coast. I hope other parish and county presidents, mayors, take his lead and do the same. Last week, our strike force picked up 37,000 gallons of oil mix.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yeah, and over 12,000 large contractor bags of tar balls, 12,000 of those bags in 1 week. So I feel at least a little bit hopeful in that situation that, you know, something will finally be done since we're not relying on BP and those guys to do it for us. We're actually taking over that for our own good. So that's
just
good hopeful information.
Just to put that into some kind of perspective. Do you have any idea of how many miles of coastline we're talking about?
Well, where those specific numbers were picked up is a very small portion, concentrated area of our marsh. It's called Bay Jimmy. And
can you estimate it in square miles or acres or anything?
I will try to estimate it in square miles of probably being about 19 square miles.
Wow, that's not much.
And it's between 19 and 22.
Joanna, can you tell our listeners how you disposed of all of this and whether in the process it was weighed by anyone?
it was weighed and counted. I don't know what process they're using to do that. This is a very new program, like I said. But and disposal, of course, they're, you know, following all the guidelines for disposal. I don't know where it is being disposed at this moment. But
is it being turned over to BP?
Well, it wasn't so much where. I wanted to hope the listeners could get some idea in terms of gallons, barrels, or pounds in terms of the tar balls to get some reference point.
No, unfortunately, I don't have pounds. I just have bags. If anybody's familiar with contractor bags, about 10 of your big lawn bags, collecting your leaves, will fit in one contractor bag.
Uh-huh.
So think of 120,000 of your leaf bags if you're out there raking your leaves.
So if there were 20 pounds, then you're talking about, even at 20 pounds, you're talking about over 2 million, 2.5 million pounds of tar balls.
Right.
Yeah, it's a huge number. And I think
that would be a loose estimate, of course. I mean, I like to point that out.
But I think it would be a good idea for someone to get that number because that number is important, as I'll discuss with you later on.
Okay. Well, we work very closely with P.J. Hahn, who is our director of the coastal management here in the parish, and I'm sure he would be happy to give me those figures next week as far as the weight goes.
And how many gallons of oil was recovered, did you say?
It's a little over 37,000.
Wow.
That's incredible.
37,203. To be precise.
Wow.
And the way that they're doing this, I'm sorry to mean to interrupt, but they literally have shop vacs on boats with long extension poles, and they're sitting out there and sucking the oil off the grass and off the marsh, and that's how they're doing it.
When you say they, are you talking about the fishermen are out there doing that?
He's hired the fishermen that are out of work. He's hired local residents that are out of work because of the oil spill to be on the strike force for Platinum Parish, yes.
Wow.
Do we know if BP is going to pick up the tab for this?
We're hoping they will. At this point, that is up in the air. They're certainly going to send them a bill. But as you know, those bills aren't being paid. Even when people are sick and dying and can't eat, they're not paying the claims. We have one story today about a gentleman and a husband and wife group who own a fishing store. Basically, they sell seafood. And he has been blind for 7 years and also has severe kidney problems and they're still waiting on any payment from BP, and he has missed his last four dialysis because they can't afford to do it and is in just horrible shape. And this is an older couple, and they still haven't gotten penny one from BP. So if that gives you any clue at the desperate situation, how money's just not coming in, of course he cannot go to work on the strike force or anything because of his physical condition. So there's a lot of people. There's 1,000 stories like that out there. And they're losing their house, they lost their car. It's terrible.
Now, the people, I can hear it when you have sort of the kindred was a bit worse with the irritation in the throat, but I can hear you doing the same throat thing that kindred was doing. Are you still sick? And also the people who are out collecting the oil in the boats, what is their physical health like?
Well, one good thing about the strike force is we're not worried about public perception.
Yeah.
And they are covered in protective gear, eyewear, respirators, you name it, they're covered. Physical health, of course, it doesn't matter how many respirators you have on, you're gonna absorb some of this stuff through your skin. There's, you know better than I do that there's so many ways to absorb it. One of the reasons, and I do apologize for my voice today, we were out in the marsh, actually, in Bay Jimmy all day Wednesday collecting samples and doing some things and documenting. And So all of us are a bit, you know, have a bit of the crud, and that's why my voice is the way it is today. And I did do some, tried to gargle with some things to help me before the show.
I hope that didn't include seawater.
No, we're getting enough of that. We're getting enough of that. Actually, a little bit of alcohol to gargle with seems to help on a short-term basis, but
especially if it's 50 years old.
Well, especially if you forget to spit at the end. Excuse me, but I know.
Well, one of the things that we were going over again this morning was the article from the CDC where they are, and you probably already know this, but in case the listeners don't know this, and it's something actually you should know, is the fact that the CDC right now are tracking symptoms which are related to eyes, skin, respiratory, cardiovascular, gastrointestinal, neurological systems, including worsening of asthma, cough, chest pain, eye irritation, nausea, and headache. Now, from what I'm hearing, even in your throat, you fall on that list. And what they're doing is they're asking people to, or actually I'm sure they're not asking, but I'm letting you know you should.
Yes.
You absolutely should be calling in on the poison control after these experiences, because it will allow the poison control to start actually seeing the true numbers of how sick people are getting in the Gulf region. You go out on your boat and this happens, this is an absolute, you know, byproduct of either the nitrogen oxide that's in the air that's so volatile that it sucks the oxygen out, or it's from the irritants, which is from the oil, or it's from the irritants caused by the Core Exit 9500. The poison control centers are all tracking it as a Core Exit 9500. So, Mandy, do you want to give any information on that?
Well, yeah, that comes to my suggestion about it. One of the things that's important is to remember that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So you need to create a situation where you can't be ignored by the government or the press. But you can only achieve it by being on the edge of annoying and providing information that the government may be annoyed with and BP is, but the press really would like it. Simon made a comment, the press moved on. They move on because they feel they don't have anything hot to give the public that makes them want to look. So you have to turn yourself into a hot situation again. And here's some suggestions how you can do it. One is you need to get together a campaign and call and write and send emails to all the new anchors, news anchors, the networks, PBS, every news outlet you can think of. You organize a group of people to do it and outline the daily strategy. You can even include teenagers. They can do it after school if you have standard emails. It doesn't have to be complex. Keep it simple and short, but never stop complaining. Ashley was researching the poison control, and they said, well, we only had 1,000 complaints. They listed the sources.
I'll tell you what the sources are.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
There's 1,000 calls to the exposure. That's all the poison control is listing, which is what the EPA is basing everything on. That's it, 1,000 people, that's it. So they say since July 29th, they only had 254 calls from Louisiana. They received from Florida 215 calls. Alabama and Mississippi, 200 calls. And that's only with people concerned that they may possibly, could maybe possibly been exposed. But by the same token, the CDC is taking a list of what I just said. So
back to where I was. We need to get those numbers up, or actually you do. I already feel involved. And if you've got people sitting there in their spare time or spending 20 minutes before dinner and you've got all your neighbors sending emails, then it gets up to 50 or 100 a day. Then we're talking about a couple thousand a month. If you send it to the identical email and just send one to ABC and NBC, in fact, look up people like Diane Sawyer, Anderson Cooper, Brian Williams, all the anchors, Jim Lehrer at PBS, Katie Couric at CBS, and basically send the same email to each one of them. And if the anchors are getting 200 emails a day from Louisiana, it'll affect them over a month. That's 6,000 a month. So even though they're very similar, it just keeps the pressure on them. And it motivates them to run an article or do something because they realize there's a lot of attention. And getting back to the numbers you read, take these statistics, translate them into simple numbers the public can understand, like 2.5 million pounds of tar balls. It's dramatic. Take the gallons and draw an analogy. I'm sure you'll get some help from a professor to how many carloads of gas. This is equivalent to 10,000 cars filling up at the gas station. Find simple but dramatic things that the everyday person can understand. And if you give those pre-prepared numbers to the media in these emails we're talking about, they will use them. They will steal your information as if it were, you know, sitting on the street, a $10 bill on the street, and walk away. They don't care.
Right.
They just need it. So
right.
Don't rely on them to do this. Do it for them. So keep sending these numbers. Every week when you do a cleanup, send them the numbers every week. If it's daily, send them the numbers. And then take the numbers and what we call spread them out, okay? I asked about the size, 19, 20 square miles. Look up the total square miles that you know are covered and say, well, if everybody's in this parish and there's a million square miles and we just did 20, then obviously that's 500 times that. So if everybody got out, that would be, you know, a billion pounds of tar balls and 2.5 million additional gallons of oil. So where did the oil go? You're picking it up. And if you take these numbers and put it out, then everybody will understand. And the next one on the list is, at the same time in these emails, have people write more personal ones. I need help. I'm suffering. I have symptoms. I'm sick from this thing.
Honest ones. And we're not talking, right.
No,
we're talking,
I
right.
Mean, please
right.
Don't jump in. And list them all. A raspy voice, the constant coughing, skin rashes. We heard some conversation from Kendra. She had bumps in arms and legs. It's common to have migraine headaches that can last a week, heart palpitations, muscle spasm, rectal bleeding is another one. And no phony ones. You don't need to be phony. Just the truth. But hammer
right.
Daily. So you imagine someone like a Diane Sawyer or an Anderson Cooper getting 200 emails from people saying, my voice is raspy, I'm constantly coughing, I have muscle spasms, my husband's passing blood. And again, don't be diplomatic or underplay the symptoms. Say things like, I throw up every day. If it's true, I cough all day. My children are sick and could die from this. Whatever it is, just keep saying it. Because what you'll do is create competition between the various anchors for a story. For example, right now, Katie Couric on NBC, has the lowest ratings. She needs good stories. So if she sees something good in this, she's going to try and beat NBC and ABC because she needs the ratings. So by doing this, you can create somewhat of a competition between them for this information. And once they start, they'll call you by name. So basically, you know, it's the old story. Make yourself a squeaky wheel. And last but not least was Ashley's, is complain to poison control. If everybody sends the same emails and makes, what if everybody came home every day in your parish and, I don't know, there's probably, 5,000, 10,000 people, whatever it is, then, and if every one of them made one phone call to poison control a day, that'd be 300,000 phone calls in a month. And that phone call doesn't need to last more than a minute or two and repeat what's in the emails. And you throw in people like the American Red Cross. You know, don't limit yourself. So by organizing people and outlining a program like that, you'll get yourself right back on the front page of the newspaper and right back on national television giving interviews. And that's my suggestion. I mean, this is almost like organized labor on a strike or some other conflict issue that you've all seen on television, where whether it's look at the masses of people that object to the G8, which is the economic conference, and how much media attention they get by a few thousand showing up and picketing. Maybe what you need to do is organize picketing and marches to the FDA's office or wherever BP's office is. Take a Saturday morning, plan family picnics, and all of your family picnic around them in front of their place with signs. I think 2,000 people or even 500 people in front of VP's office would get national attention. So anyway, hopefully that's enough, and I'm sure if you think about it, you'll come up with creative ideas that I haven't thought of.
Okay, can I ask one favor? I do want the data. I don't need it 200 times.
You know. Joanna, yes, okay. He does. Just ask his wife.
And there's several issues for me that's going on with the Core Exit 9500. One is the fact that you have this in your throat right now tells me you have been exposed to poison. You have every reason to call poison control. Now, when I was a nurse in the emergency room 1,000 years ago, I worked poison control. I understand poison control. Now, I understand it has changed, but when you call in, make sure your name and number gets down. Get yourself registered with poison control and make sure that you get the information. And every time this happens, that you're out, call them again and say, it happened again. And you're seriously having problems. The problem with the workers that are having headaches, they are exposed to toxic poison. You deserve to have CDC, who is monitoring poison control, know that this is happening. And this is this is critical to your future, because this is, according to Valdez, this does not go away. This happened to the Valdez victims. And I say victim because you are a victim every time you go out there, or have the fact that you've been victimized by the fact that you have actually been exposed. This is toxic poison. Now, one of the other things that I read between the lines, which really I learned to read a lot between the lines because I'm married to a lawyer for 20 years. I had no choice, okay?
That helps.
So, between the lines, what I got from reading, I'm going to slip into something else and then come back to this. When we had a problem with Manny's having a heart attack after Vioxx, and then my dad and renal failure from Bextra, neither one of the drugs were ever tested. The doctor lied. He's now in jail right now. They looked for everything that could be predisposition to make sure that nothing could be done for my husband, nothing could be done for hundreds of thousands of people out there, because they don't want to pay anybody. So they are going to be looking for predisposition, like with you. You've had a previous illness. But you have to make it very clear that you did not have, and I'm getting this from you and Kendra, that you did not have this cough before. This is new. Your illness was completely in a box. It was, but just because you have a compromised immune system and this toxicity has made your illness come up again, does not negate the fact that you have poison in your system. And every time you have this response, you have toxic poison in your system. Now, one of the areas that it's affecting, which we were just listening to something this morning, is the Lipton area. The Lipton area is like the most important thing that is affected by the pancreas. It's affected in the brain. It affects your blood, and your entire body is affected by it. It affects your metabolism, your respirations. It affects your liver, automatic nervous system. There's a whole cascading of events, so you need to start getting on poison control, because your future and your children and their children and everybody else in your area, are if you are affected this way and you're affected every time you're out, I mean, all that entire cleanup crew, if they have responses like this, they need to report that every day to poison control.
Right.
All right.
The problem has been, I'm sorry, the problem has been with that is that when they call poison control and they're asked for their contact information, they're afraid to give it because these fishermen that were employed by BP in the cleanup were actually told, not to talk about that. And they could not afford to lose their jobs. They were cutting them left and right, anybody that got sick, anybody that complained about a cough. But now that they've laid off more than 70% of these fishermen, we're going to start hearing from them, much better.
And by the way,
more.
You don't necessarily, although Ashley would prefer that, what's important is the call is made. And what they should say is the truth. I can't give you my name because I'm afraid BP is going to persecute me. And just say it as it is. The truth is
right.
The truth. And if you say it often enough, people will hear you. Sometimes it's more important to say something, frequently than it is anything else, because people don't hear the first time. And in business, people will annoy you. They will ignore you, and they will annoy you too, honestly. But the reality is they can't avoid you if you keep saying it over and over again. There's an expression in law that you can't unring a bell. And that's what you really want to do. You want to place yourself in a position where what you keep saying cannot be unrung, so to speak.
Right. Absolutely. And can I just give the Poison Control the center phone number for all of the United States so that there's people listening in Alabama, Florida, anybody that has symptoms they can call?
Yeah, go ahead,
I wrote down two contact numbers, or we did, which was, it said to, for questions about poison control or poison prevention, call your local poison control center at 1-800-222-1222. And then they also said to contact the American Association of Poison Control Centers, Jessica Wehrman, W-E-H-R-M-A-N. Her number is 703-894-1863, and it's Wehrman at aapcc.org. And I would make sure that number gets passed out.
Ashley will send you all this information to your website, or I will, so you'll be able to use it again. So you can publish it and put it out there for everybody that needs it.
Ashley, if you send it to me, I'll make sure I put it up on the article that goes along with this program.
Fabulous.
That would be great, Simon. Thank you.
Oh, okay. I do want to ask a couple more questions about the Gulf. Do you have any more water testing results?
We don't have any test results that are back as of yet. Nothing that additional to what we spoke about the other day. We do have some rainwater testing that we did do in the middle of the French Quarter, and those results should be back very soon. We're waiting on those to come back. And the testing that the samples that we took Wednesday obviously are not back yet. So we're waiting on our lab right now.
How about the air testing equipment?
The air testing equipment had a glitch. What Kendra was talking to you about the other day is we get kind of some real-time testing when we're processing it as it's going through the system, and we see, toluene showing up and different benzene, different things showing up in the air, and then that data is sent to a computer and analyzed and brought back to us with, understandable layman's terms. We're waiting on that to come back now. They're telling us it should have been back yesterday, but we have not received it yet. So, and that will be a 2 weeks worth of air samples from all over South Louisiana. So we're hopeful that will be up Monday.
All right. I'm looking forward to reading those results, as I'm sure Ashley and Manny are.
Oh, I really. And also, were there any more of the kill of the fish that happened?
Well, we had 4 fish kills the week following our conversation. Our conversation took place on 9/11. So between 9/11 and today, we've had 4 massive fish kills. In Plaquemines, and another one in St. Bernard Parish, which is our neighboring parish in coastal Louisiana. These were everything from a baby whale to a dolphin, crabs, redfish, mullet, pogie fish, all different species, and just literally miles of dead fish. They decided, the federal agencies decided that testing was not needed. It was due to algae blooms and low oxygen in the water, but once again, our parish president pushed really hard, and so now they're finally getting some testing done out there, so we're anxiously awaiting those results, and they're doing tissue testing on the fish that were gathered from those fish kills, so we're very anxious to get those results back as well.
Are you doing any, you're doing independent testing with that also, or not?
We have a sample we have not sent off yet, strictly because of funding. We do not have the funding. We're trying, right now we're doing so many different tests and trying to feed families and things that we're trying to spread it out as much as possible. So we simply don't have the funding to get that test done at this moment. But it's a good preserved sample, so I'm hoping in the next week we'll have a little more funding and maybe we can get that sent off to the lab.
I understand that on Thursday and Friday, there was a kind of meeting of the minds held in Tampa. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. What it was the National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medicine, which is a well-known and incredible organization that met Thursday and Friday of this week in Tampa, Florida. And the topic of their discussion was the federal response to the health effects associated with the Gulf of Mexico oil spill. When I read their initial report, which they had done after a first meeting, which was June 22nd and 23rd of this year, it's about a 100-page document, and it was very truthful and really gave some good information about the toxicity of the corrective and everything else, and I was very encouraged. However, this meeting of the minds was what they were asking for is affected residents of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida to be at this meeting to be counted for this health study that they're doing. And they did absolutely no promotion for this meeting. First of all, they held it in Tampa, which that's the first problem I have. Uh-huh. These people are sick and broke and can't afford to get to Tampa, even if their health would allow it. Second of all, there was no promotion, and no one knew about it until the day it was happening, which was Thursday. Our parish president and Governor Jindal did not know anything about this meeting, and I have that firsthand from a conversation. So that made me a little bit suspicious, so I dug a little bit deeper and found out that after their initial meeting and reporting of good, truthful information, which they released that information on August the 10th, the next week they received a $10 million grant from BP.
I can't wait for Manny to jump in.
Well, there's nothing to jump in. This is standard operating. I, without even making a phone call, I could have told you that was the solution. There are instances in our book where we chronicle where there was a well-known researcher named Prestai in Edinburgh that criticized genetically modified foods. So he made a $250,000 donation to the University of Edinburgh, and they denounced his research because of it, and it took, I think 50 of the most famous scientists around the world to do a follow-up report to prove that he was right, to save him. And at the same time, Monsanto tried to have a professor fired at the University of California at Berkeley because he had the nerve to write an article saying that GMO crops in Mexico were destroying the crops there. So they basically will attack and do this to anybody who gets in their way. So bribery is still the best form of business.
Not good, but...
predictable.
Predictable, that's...
Well, so we found out about it Thursday. I called our parish president. He got on the horn. We did a bunch of things, and we went ahead and started pulling information from our health study and sending it over to them so at least some people could be counted. What I was afraid of is that this meeting would end Friday at 5 o'clock, and they would say no one came forth to say they had any problems. So, therefore, there must not be any problems. The end. And that's what it seemed like to me, that they were trying to sneak one past us once again. Even the people in the Florida area did not know about this. I mean, it was not promoted. It was deep, very deep down in their website, and it was just an amazing, bag of tricks once again. And but I think we caught it in time, so we're working with them to try to get some more of those meetings set up across the Gulf states and things like that. So that's where we are with that, and that's what actually happened, and it was very discouraging and disappointing, but, again, I think we caught it in time to stop, what the world was trying to do, so.
Yeah, those are things I was mentioning need to be put right out there in front of God and everybody to the media, and if you complain often enough, sooner someone like an Anderson Cooper won't care, and they will just get up and write an article about it and take the position that, okay, fine, let's see what they'll do, and they will do something. But you've just got to keep shoveling it and shoveling at it at them until something happens, and you never know what'll happen. By the way, the most common thing in business history is somebody, Ashley pointed an article to me the other day about a whistleblower who stood up and contradicted all of their information in regard to some of this.
They went to the CDC and they actually contradicted. There's a whistle. Did you know about that? The whistleblower?
No.
Yeah, I can't find it.
Let me explain for a moment then. What happens is they manage to get away with this for a while, and then finally someone who works for them becomes so disgusted by their conduct, they turn them in. And if you keep complaining enough and raising these issues enough, people start to dig into their conscience. And sooner or later, some employee who's watching what they're doing, who can't sleep at night, will jump up and say something that will be so newsworthy it'll break it open. So if you can keep doing that, you will affect their employees and undermine their position. Because I can assure you that a great many of their employees do not agree with what they're doing.
And unfortunately, I'm looking at the article. It was July 31, which gets back to the number of callers that called in. And there was an EPA whistleblower that came forward and said the government is lying about the lethal effects of Corexit, lying about water samples. A large area of Gulf fishing waters have been reopened, and they're lying. They said we have samples, we can prove it. But that's back in July. So forgotten, swept under the carpet, and as Manny said, putting these things on your list of things to do, reporting it to poison control, or I don't know, Manny, EPA.
Well, it doesn't. Running names doesn't matter. What's important is you just start setting it because you don't know which one's going to help you. And I can tell you, in my years of being a lawyer, that I never really knew sometimes why I won or how I won because forces you never anticipate often resolve those issues for you. So somewhere out is somebody out there who's going to help you, who you don't know, never heard of, and is upset by what's going on. And sooner or later, he will give you information that will be so damaging that will have a huge effect on what's going on. So send it to everybody. And even send it directly to BP, because guess what? It upsets BP. And anything that sets BP helps you.
And one of the other issues that I was still concerned about last week when we were talking about water, the water supply and, what to do, the fact that your tap water is not drinkable. And I was looked under the Pennsylvania oil or problem with the gas that went into the tanks that went into people's wells. And I'm not certain how they went about getting the gas company to supply them with water, but that may be an issue you want to check into because you have the same rights. You have rights, doesn't she, Manny, have
Absolutely.
Rights?
Absolutely. And if you make enough stink, you can force them to provide you with bottled water or something that will be helpful to everybody because drinking a large amount of that water is hazardous to your health. I'm not even certain that drinking a small amount isn't hazardous.
Oh, it's completely toxic.
So, you need to take some steps about it. And, again, the more noise you make, it's the more likely you are to get somebody to jump up and do something for you. So your emphasis right now is less about trying to win today than it is winning six months, 4 months, 3 months, whatever it is down the road. And you do that by staying the course, by just keeping at them, because they wear down. They're hoping you're going to go away. And when they realize you won't go away, it gets very difficult for them. It really does, because everything with them is short-term.
And this is long-term health issues that are evident by past history of the use of these toxins and what's happened in Valdez.
Well, let's talk about lawyers again for a moment. There are scores of lawyers out there dying to file lawsuits. And generally people go, they're chasing ambulances, whatever their particular feelings about lawyers. But they're an asset to you. So at some point in here, they want to file lawsuits. Well, you're going to give them information and reasons to file them. And the more they file and the more they stir up, is the better it is for you. So rather than treating them like the enemy, and I've been on both sides of this issue, use them by providing them. Look for the biggest law firms who file these lawsuits, and I know they're already looking for clients, and provide them with this data. They will use the data, and the fact that you're providing the data and citing them will upset BP even more. So pretty soon BP is in a position where they have to buy you off the way they're buying other people off, and that's what you really want. And again, it's about being the squeaky wheel.
And sorry, go ahead.
Just real quick, BP has tried to buy us off. I will say that publicly. The three of us have all been offered very cushy, high-paying jobs as community liaisons and also grants for our organization, which I would like to say on the record we declined, only because of what goes with those grants as far as what you're able to talk about and things like that.
The offers will just get higher. In other words,
$42 in our bank account.
No, that's not the point. The point of it is, of course, you're not going to accept it. You have too much integrity for it. But every time they make an offer to you, there's some admission that goes with that offer that's of some interest to you. In other words, what if they offer you double what they offered you before? Then you're going to say to yourself, I'm getting somewhere. They're hurting. Why would they make these offers to me, and why would they offer more money if I weren't getting under their skin? And the least you get out of it is a sense that you're getting somewhere. And sometimes that's a very good feeling when you're fighting this kind of battle.
And
some
again,
confirmation
for you and
going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Right. So anything you do like that that causes that response will cause a certain amount of joy in you, as well as creating a situation where the people around you become, you know, happier because they're going, look, see what's happening? Look what they're doing. They're now offering them more money. They're offering to make them go away. They're trying to do something. So we must be achieving something. And that's the feeling you want to constantly give the people around you, that you in some way or another are making some progress that, you know, encourages them to keep up this fight. So that goes to the mental aspect of what you're doing.
For me, I'm going to go back to the Vioxx-Bextra example, because my husband's left with a permanently damaged heart, and my dad is dead. So to had somebody bought us off, let alone even offer anything, because they said, oh, everybody's predisposed. My dad was old, and my husband, oh, he must have predisposition there, you know? So
right.
It's the same in taking it over to oil. The deal is, if you accept, you may have long-term health issues.
They're not going to accept anything, Ashley.
Oh, okay. Anybody accepting it?
I know. And I know we've got arguments on both sides of that, because look at the people we could help if we accepted it. But on one hand, one of the vows that we've made to the people that we are serving is that we won't take any money from BP so that we can stay truthful, and we can't do everything that we're doing right now. So that's the reason. And I know a lot of good could be done with that money, but on the same hand, a lot of evil comes along with it. So that's why we struggle along with
it. But that's only part of it. The other part of it is that it's a temporary fix. In other words, whatever they give you now is not enough in the long run, which I'm sure is obvious to you, too. You know, at the end of the day, you'll all be left with problems. So that's the other reason, too.
That's exactly right. And the community liaison position comes with a confidentiality agreement, of course. And what happens in that's a 3-year agreement. So what happens with that is, once you're signed on and you're receiving this big fat paycheck, they can cut you at any time. But still, for 3 years, you can't talk about any of that publicly. So, you know, it comes along with a lot of things. So we've heard good arguments on both sides, but we're really committed to, you know, staying where we are. And
why 3 years? 3 years isn't that, wouldn't that be the end of the ability to sue anybody, Manny?
No, 3 years is the longest you can go with a confidentiality agreement and enforce
it
in a great many states. In the state of California, that would be illegal, but I think there are only 4 or 5 states that's followed California's lead. So,
that makes sense.
And by the way, if they could make that agreement enforceable for 10 years, it would have said 10 years.
Right.
Exactly.
That's what I thought, too. I thought maybe they chose 3 years, pulled it out of the air, because obviously in 3 years, everything they're hoping will have been settled. They would have been moved out. and you know,
no, they're not that naive. The,
right.
The litigation itself could take 5-8 years.
Well, or 20 years, as it did in Alaska, 20 years later.
Well, yes. Alaska's a little different because Alaska is a Republican state, and I think you're still a Democratic state. And there were a lot of forces. Well, take a look at the politics of Sarah Palin. Agree with her or disagree with her. Her view, of course, would be that, you know, it's not that big a deal. And so at the end of the day, you have to look at the state where all this is going on and how the state addresses these kind of problems, and which I think is a fear of theirs, because I do not believe they will do well, judging by what I read. For example, I follow the case involving the convalescent home in New Orleans where the owners were sued, or not sued, but prosecuted for murder.
Remember,
you know the story, of course, better than I do. But the people of New Orleans were not fooled by this at all. So
right.
I don't expect them to be fooled by that. So I don't think they're going to get a sympathetic ear. In fact, I expect them to try everything they can to have the case removed to a different jurisdiction. So at the end of the day, time is on your side, because once the litigation starts, then they lose control. And that's one of the reasons why you want to provide as much information to lawyers as you possibly can, because lawyers will guarantee that this litigation gets going, and the quicker it gets going is the more action you get.
And
well,
I'm so sorry.
I keep doing that. I just had, he brought up the word litigation, and it popped something in my head. EPA is refusing to release a lot of their testing results in the area pending litigation. And I don't quite understand that, and I can't get a clear answer from EPA when I call them.
Well, let me answer it for you. The government doesn't want to be a pawn in litigation. So what happens is if they release particularly negative information that gets in the hands of a lawyer, there's nothing more damning than this kind of information when it's put out by the government. So they're afraid of being the source of this kind of litigation in terms of fanning the fires. So they want to stay out of it. What will happen is sooner or later, lawyers will force them to release that information through various forms of discovery and litigation, and they don't want to do it until they have to, because they're afraid of the influence this might have. And some of it is the power of BP, but some of it also is the fact that they're just cautious about, you know, adding to the problem.
Shouldn't that information be available to the citizens, since it is a federal agency, through the Freedom of Information Act, though? I mean,
That's exactly how you get it, and that's why the Freedom of Information Act is what it is. It's to stop, basically, governments from rat-holing information because they don't want to be part of all this. So, yes, I'm sure it's occurred to somebody already, certainly a news source, that they're going to have to use the Freedom of Information Act to get the information they want.
That's the track that we're on right now, trying to get this information, because these test results are telling, you know, this is what people are depending upon to know if they're safe or not, and the fact that they're not releasing the results, and this is a federal agency, is just disgusting to me, and I'm just being frank. I mean,
as a lawyer and being a citizen of the United States when I was practicing law, it disgusted me that I was forced to take this action to find out information that would help my clients, who are as much citizens of the United States as the president is. And, yes,
exactly.
It's always bothered me and still does.
And for me, as not a lawyer, I'm not a lawyer, but that's a joke in that. I'm not a lawyer, but okay, fine, I'm going to say it anyway. For me, I go back to that whistleblower at the EPA. Obviously, if they're reporting back in July that there were lies about the tests, they don't want anybody to see these tests.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's logical.
It blows my mind. I was on the phone with the EPA this week trying to get them to do some testing down here with the rainwater, which, by the way, status report, still not one drop tested, in spite of our results. And the lady literally said to me, how do you think oil is getting up in the sky? Why do you think that's even necessary? And I wanted to scream. Did
you say, please look up acid rain when you hang up?
Well, no, literally what I told her, and it was the nicest thing that I could come back with because I was really, it was one of those bite your tongue moments. I said, I have a fifth grade science textbook that I can send you if you need to be educated on the subject.
Good for you.
However, since you are working with the EPA, I had assumed that your education reached farther beyond the fifth grade level in science. If you don't know about basic evaporation and acid rain, then I am very frightened.
The next time someone comments to you about how rude lawyers are, understand that's why lawyers become rude. It's because we get this every day of the week when we're practicing law from anyone in the government. You just pull your hair out. You swear people have to flunk IQ tests to go to work for the government.
It's the only way you can be manipulated.
I'm choosing
I'm laughing,
to believe
honey.
That they're
you
not that stupid and they're just pretending.
I'm sorry, wait.
That's what I'm choosing to believe that they're not that stupid and they're just pretending because it's the only way I can even go on day to day. I just can't believe that that's really what she thinks. How do you think the oil's getting up in the sky, really? There's no need to test the rain. That's a direct quote.
Sadly, it's a combination of both. You know, these people who work for the government, you know, there's an old line about those who can do and those who can't do teach. In our society, it would be those who can do and those who can't go to work for the government. And that's really sad, but it's true. These people, I mean, if you spent as much time in a government office as a lawyer does dealing with these people, you would understand that it's really an institutional problem. And ask yourself, you know, fishermen don't earn a lot of money. They work very hard for their money. People who work for the government don't work at all and earn the same money doing nothing. So for them, it's avoiding hard work.
Well, I don't know if I want that going out in the airwaves.
Well, that's true.
I'm so polite. I'm sitting here saying things afterwards going, wow, did I just say that? And I'm listening to this going, ooh, did we just say that?
And you're probably asking yourself, why did she marry him?
Okay, Manny, I have to ask you a question, and this will probably cause you to laugh so hard that you'll fall off your seat. But should FEMA have been brought in?
Yeah, that will make me laugh. First of all, you know, we saw FEMA Katrina. That answers it all.
Wait a minute. We saw FEMA when we lost our home in the earthquake. Oh my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
In Los Angeles, if you weren't Latino, you could get no response whatsoever.
That is not supposed to be anything other than that's really what happened to me. I mean, it was tough. It was tough.
Yeah.
At any rate.
Oh, yeah. They did not respond well after the Northridge earthquake, and sadly, that was very disturbing.
So simple answer would be no, you wouldn't recommend that FEMA get involved.
I can think of an appropriate four-letter word that my wife would never let me use.
No, don't even think it. Evil thoughts. Woo, the nuns have been smacking those wrists.
everybody take a deep breath and think of their favorite four-letter word, and FEMA is the four-letter word, so it deserves the other four-letter word.
Oh, I don't know. Defend them a little bit.
Okay.
I just have to register my agreement with Manny on that. That's all.
Okay. All right. I'll be the outsider here.
my second question that likely will get Manny laughing again. Thad Allen, hero or villain?
Thad Allen is just another bureaucrat given an ugly, dirty job that he can't do anything about. And it's either that or the highway, and I really feel badly for him because he's in such a compromised position. Considering what he was given, I thought he tried to be as honest as he was permitted, and everyone can think about what that means because I'm not sure. I don't think he was given much to work with, and I think it was an extremely difficult situation for him. So I will be more sympathetic than critical, knowing the forces to be. Shocker, doesn't it?
And just a real quick note on that that I feel is important. On September 19th, which was the official day that they killed the whale last week, Thad Allen turned all of the operation, the Area Unified Command, over to the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, who's now leading that. It's no longer Thad Allen. And if, in case anyone doesn't know, their former name was MMS, the Mineral Management Service.
Right.
Who I feel are responsible for the, partially, at least, this mess to begin with. So.
Well, the Mineral Management Service was created by Dr. Gerberling, who was Bush's appointment to the FDA, and most of those things have been basically dismantled in the last few months by her successor. I mean, he made a horrible mess of the FDA. And as a result, a lot of these things have been changed and altered, but not soon enough and not effective enough.
Right.
Joni, I want to wrap up this part of the program, but
yes.
I want to ask you a very charged question. What is the political climate in the region? Did the feds do enough?
Well, I can only speak for myself. In my opinion, and most people that have relayed their emotions and such to me, no, they haven't done enough. What they have done is stalled and starved with all these games that they're playing, and so no, they haven't done enough. That's my feeling, and that's what I'm hearing from the people around me. It's just been a lot of disorganization, and you can't reach the people that you need to reach, and a lot of people covering up things, so... So the answer to your question would be no. That's a simple answer.
Mm. Are you surprised by that answer, Manny?
No, it's just consistent with the way our government works. You know, the government would like to tell you they're prepared for these kind of disasters and they're ready to jump in and help the public. And the answer is they're not. And in all fairness to them, this is a extremely difficult, complicated problem created by an oil company that really should be punished for what they've done, and I think criminally punished, because I can assure you that if I owned that oil well and I wasn't BP and didn't have their political might, I would be published quite severely by our government, if not prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
Punished, yeah. So at the end of the day, the only reason they're in the position they are is their political pull. No other reason.
It's so unfair.
Very unfair. And, you know, one of the things I was pondering about is I think, and Manny, if I'm not correct on this, and, you know, because we haven't pre-talked about this, I think, you know, when I was saying about the poison control, since you have their email, you'll have a paper trail every time you get sick if you email that person. You'll have a paper trail for the future, for you and everybody else who is sick on that particular day.
Well, that's right, but that paper trail is also important for the media, because they'll go, oh, you couldn't really have made that many phone calls, and if you provided a media source a stack of
emails,
they would be impressed by it. So really, sometimes the sheer volume of things impresses people, so never underestimate that.
And also, that we spoke 2 weeks ago about keeping an accurate record. That record, 3 weeks later, I'm hearing you still sick, and that means, as again, that poison is in you. And every time you're out, the poison is going back into people, and it affects serious areas of the body. And so keeping an accurate record every single day of just, you know, go to the 99-cent store. Tell people, go to the 99-cent store, buy a notebook, and every day mark a date and what happens with their health. If you're out and you're doing protective suits and you still are coughing or you have a headache for a full week, this is a total sign of this poison. And those records are absolutely important for the future.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's absolutely important.
Well, I hope we've helped a little today.
Thank you.
Joni, you're welcome to stay with us, but I want to talk about the other story that I know has Manny and Ashley ready to be peeled off the ceiling.
Well, this is a companion story to yours. We want to talk about Frankenfish, these new salmon you've probably seen on television. And what, how it dovetails to the Gulf is they managed to create a salmon that's double the former size of salmon by letting it grow 24 hours a day by gene splicing and putting chemicals in. Well, some of those chemicals they used to gene splice may be chemicals that appear in Corexit and some of these other dispersants. So in Los Angeles, I point out in our book that those of us who live here do not eat food out of Santa Monica Bay, because I used to fish there when I was a kid. And frankly, I'm an avid fisherman that have fished all down the Gulf and all the way through the Pacific, all the way down through Mexico as far as Costa Rica. And in Los Angeles, you catch a small grouper, for example, or bottom fish, and its lips are twice the size, its tail looks weird. It's affected by ingesting all these chemicals. And what's happened is now they're doing it artificially and saying it's okay. And because of their political might, they're able to do this without any stoppage from the government. So last week they went on the news and bragged about all the things they could do with this. But what they didn't point out is that the committee at the FDA who approves this is made up of industry and former employees and is so biased in favor of the biotech industry that they're going to rubber stamp these fish. So as we go along, we're going to explain why they're so very dangerous. And at the same time, our listeners should consider that the fish that are in the Gulf are exposed to the same result through a freak of this spill as opposed to someone doing it in a lab. But please, make no mistake about it. This can happen in any lab. What's happening in the Gulf to the fish can happen in any laboratory around the world that is experimenting like this. So
Ashley, let me ask you a question, because you know you're the scientist among us, if you will. As I understand
it. Oh, how sad
it,
is that?
No, as I understand it, they have taken an Atlantic salmon and grafted in some DNA from what I read was a Chinook salmon. This specifically created a growth hormone. However, they needed a trigger to activate this growth hormone, and this was achieved by adding DNA from an eel-like fish called an ocean pout. And voila, we have a salmon that grows 12 months a year rather than only a few months a year. Do I have it kind of right?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's right. They take the DNA from a single cell, because a single cell will actually keep repeating itself. And then they take like a fertilized egg and they put that single cell into it, and then it starts dividing and growing. And they do this by micro-injecting it into the cell with a needle. So that's the same, you know, pretty, I think your summation was perfect.
And let's add one item to that, though. What they don't tell you in this is which chemical they use to split the gene. That has more to do with the consequences of the gene than most of the other things that they discuss. And they really don't want to tell you, because they range from dangerous viruses like the cauliflower mosaic virus. They use BTA toxin, which is used in corn, to split genes, which is a poison. So quite frequently, the chemicals required to make this work are ones that you wouldn't get near of. So basically, America is being forced to eat things that would be normally on their poison list.
There's also a list of tests that were done with the gene insertion that disrupts the DNA, and they found that they were doing it on crops, which was the insertion of the gene, testing it on crops. I'm sure there's tons of them also on animals, on the cows and the sheep and the rabbits, et cetera. And what they found is that both the DNA and the RNA are harmed and may be harmful to the humans and their offspring. And it's a very dangerous thing that happens, because it's actually changing the DNA of the people. And when they did rat studies of GMO done, which are genetically modified organisms done in actual food, and they tested the food, see, then you could take it to the fish. So let's do the food first, is that the rats then ended up developing digestive disorders. They had inhibited the development of their brain, affected their livers, their testicles. They had partial atrophy of the liver and large pancreas, intestines, and immune system damage. Now, that was a GMO that people are right now, of course, eating off the local market. So that's the potato, which is banned in Europe and banned everywhere but the United States. Now they're talking about taking this DNA change and change it in a fish, and the problems are insurmountable. I don't even know what the debate is. They have already seen the catastrophe of what happens with DNA altering of trying to clone cows and sheep, and they have, you know, what, Manny, 6 legs and 20 tails, and, I mean, I'm exaggerating it, but it's...
No, you are. They have some of them develop horns in the middle of their head. I mean, there's a wide variety of terrible things that go with this, and so what happens is they eventually have to discard as much as maybe 50% or more of the herds, which gets us back to the salmon. There are a series of articles by researchers in British Columbia and Seattle, Washington, where they're very concerned about this. And the articles basically showed that when they penned up these transgenic fish, they would not only eat other fish like the coho salmon whose gene they have, they would eat the weaker species of their own fish. So sometimes a pool of... during this process, a pool of 50 fish would end up with only 2 or 3 alive at the end. And it's true with animals. They want to sell these transgenic and gene-spliced cows for meat, but if you saw them, only a certain amount of them could be sold. So I asked myself, well, the ones with 2 extra hoofs and the extra horns and all the rest, they're not selling that for food. Does that mean they're cutting that cow up and selling it for food and you don't know you're eating a steak from a dual-horned cow? I mean, this is pretty serious stuff.
And if the purpose of the splicing is to make it grow fast and to fatten it up and to alter this entire salmon that's going to devour anything that gets near it, then... what's going to happen to the humans? I mean, if that happens to the salmon, what's going to happen to you, especially since DNA has been shown that if you ingest this altered DNA caused by the gene splicing affects people, then what's going to happen with you eating the fish? I mean, I don't even want to go there. It just, and the fact that the government's debating on not even notifying us or putting it on the package, that's very scary.
Oh, very scary.
Let's talk about steroids. I mean, there's no difference with steroids and hormones. When you take a look what steroids do to human beings and why this country is on such a run about athletes taking steroids, a lot of it is to protect their own health. Dolly, the first sheep that was done transgenically, basically only lived 5 or 6 years and had health problems the entire way. People who've cloned dogs for a while, cloning your family pet so you could have your identical pet live forever again, basically didn't work because they had a shorter lifespan and were ill all the time. They were charging like $30,000 for cloning your dog. So the fact is that this is still in its infancy and just frightening to most scientists. And by the way, I'm not sure the scientists that I've read aren't far more concerned than what we're expressing right now.
And also they currently, and correct me if I'm wrong, Manny, they're currently feeding your farmed fish GMO corn. So now you're going to have GMO corn, which is on that list of what I just read, of the countless tests and studies that prove that the GMO foods are really harmful to people, to humans, and to the animals. And if they also add red dye, so they're going to have red dye, GMO corn, and you're going to feed this genetically altered salmon. I mean, it's pretty scary what you're going to actually be eating. I would not be in line for that. I think I would eat the grass out of my backyard first.
But that's the problem, is it's not a question of being in line. If you don't know that what you're looking at in the market store is something that comes from this kind of background, I mean, how can you do anything?
Okay. I've seen a number of situations where you know, man has tried to mess with nature, and inevitably it ends in tears. Ask the average Australian what he thinks about rabbits. You know, they're not very happy. Now, you know, the rabbit wasn't genetically modified, but it was put in a place where, you know, it really didn't belong. Salmon are somewhat cannibalistic, even in their natural state. You know, if food is scarce, they will eat their young. And that's, you know, the way salmon are. So what will happen if we have this genetically modified salmon, you know, the mega salmon, out in the wild? And trust me, it is only a matter of time before the big salmon hits the wide open oceans. What's going to happen then?
Well, history has shown that they will attack the indigenous population of salmon, overrun them, and ultimately be the survivor. You know, and it's funny because I feel like we're parroting the average movie that kids watch, the sci-fi movies, but it's exactly what happens, is the strongest species survive, therefore they will be the one that survive. Pretty simple, isn't it?
Well, and I think that an example also is that swamp eel that we talked about a few weeks back. Someone assumed that somebody left their swamp eel from their tank out into the water, and how it eats everything around it, so it's gobbling up all the fish. And then you had mentioned that it's now having a problem in your area, correct?
Right. The ones that spring to my mind are the Chinese silver carp.
Oh, yes.
In Mississippi.
Problem.
And the infamous zebra mussel.
Yes.
You know, which is destroying everything in its way.
Yeah, and that's the whole problem. It's a mixture of species until one day that species takes over, where, you know, there's problems with crocodiles, I mean, just everything in general. And basically, these people who make this for profit, you know, just go, oh, no, it's not really a problem. Everything's just great. No problem.
And, you know, as we say, I think sometimes, and this is not to be disrespectful for the people in the lab, they need to get out and smell the roses a little bit. They need to get their head out of the test tube and not be excited about just because you can, you do. You can't, just because you're able to create something doesn't mean you should go do it.
And by the way, that's why they call it Frankenfish, because anyone who took the time to read Mary Shelley's book will tell you that that was the point of her whole book. It wasn't about the monster. It was about man exceeding his ability to do things. My father had an interesting expression that I thought was appropriate. He used to say, never shall the rights of man exceed man himself. Well, in this case, the rights of scientists to advance science without any control are exceeding mankind, and that's a very, very dangerous position.
I also think it's a moral, ethical issue as well, because, you know, if there's a possibility that you could harm another individual, why are you allowing that to happen? Bad enough, you're allowing the animals to be harmed, and you're allowing nature to be harmed, but to harm the individual by allowing them to digest it just so you can go make money. There's a moral, ethical issue there to me that I think is something that really the FDA has to include in their package.
Oh, I think it goes further than that. In not only is it a moral issue, but I have a legal question, and Manny, I'm going to ask for free legal advice at this
point. I thought you were going to ask me. I'm going to lawyer you. Go ahead, Simon.
My wife, by the way, is allowed to say that no more than four times a month.
That's right. I think I exceeded it.
All right. Well, what I'm seeing is that people are patenting life for profit. Should this be allowed?
No, and I'm vehemently against it. And let's talk about how that happened. Monsanto and others wanted to patent this. It was opposed because they were basically patenting life, and a lot of people said, you can't do that. The case went all the way to the Supreme Court. The decision, which was participated in, it may even be written, it's been a while since I've read it, by Justice Clarence Thomas, is really interesting because Justice Clarence Thomas worked as a Monsanto lawyer and never recused himself from this case. So from the very beginning, those of us in legal profession knew exactly what the outcome was going to be because he was predisposed to find in favor of his former employer. It's really that simple. So at the end of the day, as long as this type of conduct is going on in our society, there will be no change, and these issues will be approved. So now people are essentially patenting lives. So I don't know what to say. Monsanto is I think is approximately 630 different patents on various forms of these lifestyles and are controlling to the market to the point where even their biggest competitor, DuPont, who's never been the best corporation in the world itself, their track record's pretty ugly, are actually suing them for trying to be a monopoly. So we have two of the most despicable companies in the world. And by the way, Monsanto's been labeled the biggest corporate criminal in history by Corporate Watch and some other watchdog organizations, fighting among themselves like little children at our expense because the winner gets to poison us more with their products. And that's very, very sad.
I mean, and there's tests to prove it. So anybody who even questions any of this with GMO or even the Frankenfish, there's some tests, but there's minimally 65 scientific proven tests and countless others that prove up that these foods are actually harmful to people. Yet they're allowed to put it out there on the market.
Yeah, these, by the way, are not our opinions. In our book, we say all this, but we say it through the mouths of all the researchers and scientists who espouse these positions, and we have in one book 1,500 references, in another book 1,800 references from doctors and researchers and articles to support everything we're saying. We're not just throwing out random opinions.
And to remind everyone or anybody who didn't catch this before on the show is the fact that there are over 100,000 medical doctors in Europe who signed petitions to ban any GMO, and they will not allow any clone to animals. They will not, if they do this with the fish, I'm sure they will ban this as well.
It's already banned.
But it's already banned. So what's there even a debate about? I can't believe the FDA is going to look at this again. Look at what?
And to show you how what kind of power they wield, right now Monsanto and others are putting pressure on, for example, the Irish government, which is small, and trying to get the World Bank to threaten them that they will not give them any more loans unless they start selling genetically modified fish in Ireland. And Ireland wants to ban all GMO products, and they're afraid to do it because of this fear of how they're going to deal with the repercussions. So we're talking about people who are performing things that were formerly done only by Rockefeller and other ones who were the robber barons of the previous century. And these are the basically corporate robber barons. That's exactly what they are.
And at the expense of people's health. I mean, as RN Magazine and the various magazines repeatedly say, and the nurses I speak to, patients are sicker than they've ever been. And the difference comes from GMO foods, and everything in every packaged goods has some GMO product in it. The ingredients within it, the additives, the hidden MSG, all of it comes from the GMO. So there's this enormous amount of DNA changed alter food that is actually going into people who are not eating organic food.
Okay. Let's do a quick commercial break here. Where can people find your books?
Well, they can buy them on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and almost every other every other seller, including if they need to, they can go to China and buy it in China. And so we're actually quite surprised at the wide range of release. If they want to get it from our website, of course, we're making a $5 donation to the Cultural Heritage Society of Louisiana, or is it New Orleans, and we are going to basically track this and continue it to contribute articles and do the rest of it. So if they want to get the book, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, our website is howtoeliminatepain.com. It'll come out autographed, and we hope you enjoy it.
All righty. So there you have it, folks, and you can rest assured I will have that link in the text wrap-up for this program. GMOs are becoming more and more commonplace. Ashley, you were stating that there is hard data showing the damage.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at pages of it right now. And unfortunately, every time the studies would prove something, as Manny was saying, either the scientists would get fired and or they would say, you know, the tests aren't quite right. Let's go do it again, and they would run another test. And this is the way the scientific testing has been done. But the actual hard studies in which 100,000 medical doctors signed do no GMO, the one on the potato I just read, when they tried to feed it the rat studies, they tried to feed it tomatoes, they ended up with bleeding stomachs and several died. And they had to force feed them. Now, rats and mice will eat anything. But the minute they gave them GMO, they would not eat it. So they literally force-fed them, and they died. But they also, in Germany, they had 12 cows that died mysteriously when fed the BT corn, which is BT corn is a bacteria that is fed into this GMO corn. They had they did it the same with soy. Soy is one of Roundup Ready's high GMO products that causes liver cell problems, causes a fatty liver. And that's second stage liver damage.
You might point out here that one of the growing problems in our country is the amount of dialysis. You were just talking about a gentleman in your area that's having a dialysis issue. And a great deal of this is caused by the GMO foods and what it's doing to humans.
It's damaging kidneys, and the list of people needing liver replacement is huge right now. There's a long list of people on the waiting list. And sadly, if they're not told this GMO high fructose corn syrup and this GMO products are harmful to the liver, they continue to eat what they think is healthy, fruits and vegetables, et cetera, that are all GMO, modified, you know, with organisms. And it's causing harm to people who are already sick.
Yeah, oddly enough, I observed Ashley about a lot of people that we even know. They go to chemotherapy, and the first thing they do is come out and eat something that's full of the same chemicals that are causing them to be in chemotherapy. And that is really sad.
Yeah, it's definitely causing cancer. I mean, there is minimally 65 tests. And
well, let's give the bonus. The other day I disagreed with Ashley about something, so she sent me 65 tests to support her position. And I said, you know, maybe there's a little more here than I think. And so every time this comes up, my wife wows me with something else. Literally. I mean, literally. I go, wow, after I read these tests. And believe me, if it's happening to them, it's happening to you. And so what do they do with this stuff? I'll give you an example. They fix the test. In some tests, they use monkeys when it turns out that monkeys are resistant to some of these issues. They'll switch up and they'll try all sorts of different combinations by testing people in advance until they determine which group of people aren't affected by any of this. So by picking and choosing the way they do their tests, they in essence control the results, which is part of the dishonesty my wife was discussing regarding my own heart attack. The guy who supposedly tested Vioxx turned out to be a fraud. He was paid a bundle by the drug manufacturer, and he basically gave them what they wanted.
Medical doctor.
Yeah, a Harvard graduate teaching at Harvard. And by the way, his excuse now is that he had a bipolar disease. He was bipolar, and that's why he falsified all this information to kill so many Americans.
I guess he doesn't like sitting in jail right now. So one of the studies they try to do, I'm looking at, because Manny said they tried studies on different things. So cleverly, someone went out and tried it on the rabbit, and that's when they found that the metabolism, the actual cells of the metabolism within the rabbit's organs changed. So even the rabbit became ill with the GMO foods.
It's really disturbing, isn't it? It just is.
The whole thing is. It's very disturbing.
All right,
and
but,
in fact, one of the things with Crohn's and IBD, we strongly believe that that is one of the things that's causing flare-ups right now. And there's also scientific proof to back that as well.
Hmm. Okay, I'm going to head off in a different direction, if you will.
Okay.
But it's the same direction in many ways. You know, we're talking about the how bad it is to genetically modify plants and animals, but couldn't, you know, genetic manipulation help the human race? I think of stem cells. Stem cells.
The answer is no. The excuse given for the genetically modified fruits and vegetables is world hunger and feeding the third world. If that's true, grow it there and feed the third world, because the United States doesn't need it at all. And frankly, Europe, Japan, and most of the other countries are doing just fine without them. But the reality is that every bit of research we've read proves that regular plants, conventionally grown, organic preferably, produce more fruits and vegetables than the GMO ones. There's a long study by the University of Arkansas and the University of Wisconsin that prove this beyond any reasonable doubt. So what is the reason for them doing it? Number one, they can control the seeds, so the farmers have to buy the seed from them.
Sterilize them.
And they sterilize them, so they have to buy them every year, which creates a huge marketplace. Then they sell the pesticides that they use on the GMOs. And my biggest complaint with GMOs is they sometimes, GMO apples, for example, are sprayed anywhere from 16 to 35 times with pesticides. Who wants to eat an apple that's been sprayed, you know, 16 to 35 times with pesticides? It's disgusting.
And the only reason it doesn't break down the enzymes to rot the fruit is that they coat it then with a special coating of wax and other things, so that you're looking at a bright, shiny apple that's been protected, but underneath that wax are layers of pesticide that you cannot wash off.
Well, let's go to the next one. Then, Simon, there's some of them, soy, I think, is one of the principal ones. They use a pesticide in the genetic change. So when the bugs eat the soy with this pesticide in it, they die. So it kills all the pesticides. So the rest of the crop is fine. So then you get a soy product, and I'm not certain it's soy. I shouldn't defame soy any more than it is. And you eat it, and you're exposed to the same thing the bug is. If you eat enough of it, and I use soy because people eat so much soy, which is genetically modified. And by the way, Japan banned genetically modified soy. 2 million people, two-thirds of the city states of Japan, or sections of it, voted against it, and the huge hue and outcry about stopping it because of their fear that it would contaminate their products and kill their people. But yet we've got the FDA with the Monsanto, who, by the way, has several former employees staffed in the FDA, telling us it's great. In fact, I think I told the story last week that Monsanto's lawyer, Michael Taylor, in 92 or 90, or I think it was the end of 91, before Clinton took office, was appointed to the FDA to manage biotech, and he ushered all of Monsanto's products and all of Monsanto's patents into existence, and then went back to Monsanto as a chief counsel and some other job, and is earning over $1 million a year as a reward for what he did while he was working at the FDA.
Ignoring all of these absolute tests that are available, scientific proof that they are damaging.
And I don't want to limit it to him. A former Commissioner Hayes, appointed by Ronald Reagan, ushered in aspartame, and quit and went to work for its manufacturer at $20,000 a month for the rest of his life without working. So the bribery, and by the way, the same bribery goes on to congressmen. You look at an area where a congressman represents a lot of of drug companies, and you'll see that he opposes any legislation. There's a doctor who's a congressman in Oklahoma who represents basically the oil interests and elected by them, who opposes global warming and anything that would affect anything that the oil companies go. This is the way our democracy runs, sadly.
Oh, okay. Maybe I didn't phrase my question correctly.
Maybe you did and we answered it wrong.
I'll try it again.
Okay.
All right. I'm not a fan of, genetically modified organisms, whether it be corn, whether it be salmon or anything else. But that there is DNA research going on that potentially could resolve some serious human illnesses. A lot of that research is in the area of stem cells. What do you think about that kind of research?
Stem cell research is 180 of all of this. It is a life-giving research, and we know several people who have benefited, including Ashley, who can discuss her own experiences with it. But I'm a classic case of someone who has a damaged genome, which is NOD2, for people who have Crohn's disease, and I have a genetic Crohn's disease. If they could stop that gene or cure it with stem cell treatment, then people have Crohn's disease could be eradicated, and a great many other illnesses could be eradicated. And I will point out that Europe is 15 years ahead of us because they don't have the conservative Republicans opposing stem cell treatment on the basis of abortions at every turn. And regardless of your religious beliefs or how you feel against abortion, which I personally don't support, I do believe the importance of embryonics stem cells are probably the single greatest advance in medicine. And we recently went to a private lecture from a stem cell doctor who showed a long video of people who he had treated and the miraculous changes in every conceivable form of disease after doctors gave up on these patients and told them they would die. Anything you want to add, Ashley?
Well, mine was from little piggies, as they said. They did, which was, my stem cells came from little pigs. So there are different types of stem cells, and that's, you know what, that's a whole hour and a half in itself if you want to do stem cells sometime. That's a whole different conversation because there's so many different, there's so much information on stem cells and different types and different things that they're doing with it, and it's just a lot of, it's a whole different conversation.
And we'll end with this. Anyone who saw this special on Siegfried and Roy and saw his incredible improvement after his stroke and the tiger incident, he was treated by the same doctor who treated Ashley in Germany. And to see him recover from the edge of death to where he is now is probably the most graphic example of how stem cell treatment can help traumatically injured people in this world.
And especially children. It really is so, you can change a child's entire future with stem cells. Again, it's a whole different conversation. So.
Oh, and I do want to have a program just about stem cells. But the point is that not all DNA modification is bad.
No, when you talk about DNA modification, we're talking about treating people who genetically have their DNA or RNA modified as a result of genetics, environmental damage, or some other thing, or consuming too many chemicals, which we point out in our next book, during pregnancy by the mother, the food, baby food that's given to them. Some are more susceptible, and their genes are damaged. And once the genes are damaged and you're not in perfect health, then stem cell treatment can affect and correct those damaged genes and replace them in a way that allows someone to return to a productive life. So here you're taking someone with damaged health problems, a defined disease or something from autism, MS down the line, and Parkinson's, and the stem cells can improve their health. So at that point, I think it's absolutely a must in our society. Instead of letting the drug companies and the hospitals mine these people for money, do surgeries on them, put them on drugs that help them, not one iota. And that's the problem. Stem cell treatment will replace probably one-third of the drug market, and that's why all of the drug companies oppose it so strenuously.
And a lot of the articles I read are not – it's misinformation. It's constant misinformation.
Yeah.
And that is what I think gets people confused on the reading from the people I've spoken to about stem cells. And it's a whole – trying to get people – keeping people confused will not allow progress in that area.
And there's a $15 billion market for testing stem cell products. So every university, every drug company, every scientist wants a piece of that pie. And they're not going to pass any judgment or recommend stem cell till they've exhausted every testing dollar they can get their hands on. Because in Europe, by the way, if they want to know the answers, just go to the doctors in Europe. They've done all these tests. They know the answers. But it doesn't help them financially to get the answers from someone else, so they won't do it.
High-level scientists, like world scientists in Europe, have done these tests. They've already, and you're talking 15, 20 years worth.
You know, Manny, I really think you're a bit of a cynic.
No, I'm just telling the truth. The truth is what it is. You know, and as I said, I can back every one of these up with articles that are contained in our book. This is, and if you sat down with some of the famous scientists from Russell Blaylock, John Olney, and some other men who had the nerve to confront the drug industry and the rest of them and tell the truth, and we're talking about people that had the divisions at WHO and world organizations. Maria Angel, the former editor of the Journal of American Medicine, who's one of the most brilliant writers I've read, you should hear her views about the business she's been in 30 years. So after years of being an editor and a researcher, her comments are far more stinging than the ones that I've made today. So I consider myself a moderate compared to the researchers and scientists in the industry.
We're just about out of time, and I want to get your final thoughts for the program, and just to get the creative juices flowing, I'm going to tell you about a great book that I read this week. The title is Cassie Draws the Universe. I won't go into the plot. There's no point. Cassie's a young lady, and basically she could care less about anything. There's no point in caring. A single person cannot change anything. Can a single person change anything?
Yes. And my last thought for the day is a single person can change everything by uniting with the next single person next to them and the next single person after that until they form a unit, like ants do in a cell and everyone else who succeeded well. And you can become an army of one. And when you have a common interest like this, as the U.S. United States did in World War II, for example, it allowed them to create an army of Americans who believed in the same thing. We survived the Cold War the same way. We put an end to communism, and we hopefully will stop nuclear proliferation the same way. So every time you say you can't do it alone, lock arms with your neighbor. Because, you know, remember that this is a country that united we stand, divided we fall. There's safety and unity, and I think between Joanna and Kendra and all the wonderful people down there, they will lock arms and they will succeed as one. So, yes, one person, one unit, one group can change the entire world.
How about you, Ashley?
You know, I have nothing to say beyond that. I absolutely agree with that. I think people in America are just, we're different. We're just great. We do have to just bond together. And thank you, Simon, for bringing back Joanne and getting us or having us have the ability to try to help people that we are so far away from. Thank you for that.
Well, hopefully we can do this again next week. My automated producer is whining in my ear, so I really need to wind this up before we get cut off. Many and
we,
Ashley,
we send our heartfelt thoughts and prayers to everybody in the Gulf. And
absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a great Saturday, and I'm sure we'll all be talking again soon. Till next time, goodbye.